Coming up on Golf Today, the LIV Golf Series announces six new signees who are slated to play outside Boston starting Friday. Who is going? We'll have a full report coming up. And we look back at the goals set by Rory McIlroy back in January. What were they? Did they include winning the FedEx Cup? And just how close did he get to checking every box? In 2014, European Ryder Cup captain Paul McGinley hops on the program to break down Rory's brilliance at Eastlake while also taking an early look at next week's BMW PGA Championship and the 2023 Ryder Cup in Italy. It's a busy Tuesday. It's Golf Today.
Golf Today. Brought to you by PointsBet.
And new as of this morning, six players on their way to the LIV Golf Series, including the 2022 Open champion, Players Champion, and winner of the Century Tournament of Champions, Cameron Smith. Now, these six players expected to compete at the LIV Golf Invitational Boston starting on Friday. Here are the players, the aforementioned Smith, who shot 64 to win the 150th Open just last month. Genesis Invitational champ Joaquin Neiman of Chile, six-time PGA Tour winner Mark Leishman of Australia, Players Championship runner-up to Cameron Smith, Anirban Lahiri of India, 2022 Saudi International champion Harold Varner III, and the PGA Tour's leading money winner without a victory, Cameron Tringali. With more on this news, we welcome in Rex Hoggard on this Tuesday. Rex, we saw this coming. What stands out?
Yeah, as you pointed out, Damian, we've seen it coming. I guess the one thing that immediately comes to mind is Trevor Immelman, our colleague, how he's going to have to deal with these changes. Keep in mind, the President's Cup international captain was already dealing with many, many changes to his team, with Louis Oosthuizen, with Brendan Grace also going to LIV Golf. He was going to have to sort of make over his team anyway, but this puts him in an even worse position because you have two players, Mark Leishman and Cam Smith, who were among the automatic qualifiers. Now he has two extra captain's picks they'll have to burn that for. And then you would think, Joaquin Neiman is the automatic qualifier. Mark Leishman would have been one of his likely captain's pick. So it's going to be a much different team. You wonder how he's going to adjust so close to the matches. And I think the other part of this, and I'll go back 2 weeks to the BMW Championship in Delaware when Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy held that players-only meeting. I spoke with one player in that meeting. I was trying to get a handle of exactly who was in the room. Joaquin Neiman was in the room for that meeting. And what I was told is they were vetted very carefully about who was allowed in that room. They clearly had no anticipation of letting someone in that room, hearing their plans, hearing what they want to do going forward, who was going to LIV Golf. So they must have had some sort of understanding from Joaquin or maybe a member of his team that he was leaning away from this. So I'm sure this comes as a surprise as well to both Rory and Tiger.
Rex, where do we go from here, even outside of the confines of the President's Cup? Where is this story headed to next, you think?
I just heard you guys talk about Paul McGinley going to be on the program in a little while to talk about the BMW Championship next week as well as the Ryder Cup next year. And it'll have an immediate impact on that. We heard Rory McIlroy talk on Sunday about really not wanting to show up at Wentworth in 2 weeks and have to look. He said, referenced the 18 players, the 18 LIV players who will be in that field. He said he actually hated the idea that they were going to be there. Now, this morning, CEO of the DP World Tour, Keith Pelley, sent out a memo. He referenced what he called, quote, strong opposition to those 18 players being in that field. And he sort of laid out why they're allowed to be in this field. The European Tour regulations don't allow for the type of suspensions that the PGA Tour has been able to do to their players to keep them out of events. They also referenced a hearing. It will be in February of early next year, and that's when the full legal proceedings for the DP World Tour will happen. But until then, these players will not only be allowed to play in DP World Tour events, they'll be allowed to earn DP World Tour points towards next season. They'll also be allowed to earn Ryder Cup points. And so those are three big things to point out.
Rex Hoggard reporting on this story on this Tuesday. Six players on their way to the LIV Golf Series. And as Rex said, Eamon, it's not like we didn't see this coming. There had been some reports. But I do feel like this is an impactful day in that Cameron Smith, listen, not the most electric personality, but his game this season has been world class. When you think about what he has been able to do, the final 36 holes alongside John Rahm and out-dueling him to win the Century Tournament of Champions. You think about the 10 birdies that he made in the final round to win the Players Championship. And of course, that 64 in the final round in the 150th Open Championship at the Old Course at St. Andrews, including that all-world up and down on the road hole on the 17th hole. But this is, there's so much subterfuge seemingly to this story, so much cloak and dagger to this story. You know, the players are murky in their plans, and that includes Cameron Smith, who just a few weeks ago in Memphis talked about his future for the rest of 2022.
My goal here is to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's all I'm here for. If there's something I need to say regarding the PGA Tour or LIV, it will come from Cameron Smith, not Cameron Percy. I'm a man of my word, and whenever you guys need to know anything, it'll be said by me.
And just following up on that, you being a man of your word, you know, the Telegraph is reporting that you've signed and are going. Would you like to say yes or no to that?
I have no comment to that. Like I said, I'm here to play the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's been my focus the last week and a half. That's what I'm here to do. I'm here to win the FedEx Cup playoffs. And like I said, it'll come from me. It won't come from Cameron Percy.
Do you intend to play the President's Cup?
Absolutely, yeah. That's something that we've been looking forward to for the last 3 years. We missed a year because of COVID, and that's something that I look forward to being a part of.
Absolutely, yeah. Expecting to play in the President's Cup. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. Cloak and dagger. No one's going to live seemingly chest held high, you know, chin up. Everybody's slinking away, it seems, including the world number two.
Not much pride evidenced from the guys who are heading to LIV. And it was interesting looking back at Cameron Smith. That was just a couple of weeks ago when he said, if there's something to come, it will come from me, which it actually didn't come from Cam Smith. It came from LIV Golf. He did talk to a reporter after the news came out, but he certainly didn't announce it himself. And there's nothing surprising in any of this at all, Damon. These are the names we've heard for quite a while. The question becomes, at what point did these guys make informed decisions? Mm. In the case of Cameron Smith, did he know what was coming up in terms of the PGA Tour? Because if you look at the reported figure that's attached to him going to LIV, it's repeatedly attached around $100 million. He's never confirmed any number, but that's the number repeatedly reported. And his career earnings on the PGA Tour are $27 million. Rory McIlroy earned more than that in one season this year. And here you can see the earnings of these guys who are out there. You know, Joaquin Niemann's only 23 years old with $14 million. You look at the three guys at the bottom of that list, no one will notice that they're gone. They've been handsomely compensated for what are effectively fairly mediocre careers at this point. Not one of them has managed a win on the PGA Tour. But in Cam Smith's case, it was very clear to almost everyone in golf, even when he won the Open Championship in St. Andrews, that he was probably headed to LIV Golf. He was very tersely brushed off questions after winning the Open about his intention.
As if we were like crazy to ask the questions.
Exactly.
Brooks Koepka is very similar at the US Open. Why are you bringing this black cloud to the national championship?
The duplicity has been a constant theme from the get-go on this, from guys who said they weren't going to do it, who then did do it. And it's not as though Cam Smith was ever particularly vocal one way or the other. He's been brushing off the questions repeatedly. But Rory McIlroy has said on Sunday that he called Cam Smith a couple of days after the Open, not only to congratulate him, but he wanted him to know what was coming up so that he had a full picture of what the PGA Tour was going to look like going forward. And Cam Smith may have already signed by then. Yeah. And Joaquin Niemann hadn't. His agent has said yesterday that Joaquin Niemann had not yet signed. And Joaquin Niemann, I've talked to people who were in that meeting as well as Rex did, and I was told by players that they were fully aware that Joaquin Niemann was suspect in terms of LIV, but there was a belief that they ill-founded, as it turned out, that he would be persuaded by math and numbers because essentially there's this idea that if Joaquin Niemann at 23 continues to hang around the top 10 or 20 in the world for the next decade, he could easily make $250 million. So it really is a question of to what extent decisions were informed when they were made by what was coming in terms of the PGA Tour. It's undoubtedly true that Neiman made an informed decision. Mm. Whether or not it's the right one, it's his decision to make. Other guys, when they signed, that's another matter entirely.
Are you not surprised that these players are kind of quiet about that? They're leaving out the back door, it seems. There's just not a lot of fanfare. There's no, yay, I'm excited to go. Are you surprised, or has this kind of been kind of part and parcel of this story that the players are kind of leaving kind of, you know, in the middle of the night, as it were?
I'm not surprised by it at all, in the sense that people will make decisions for a multitude of reasons. And Cam Smith, since the announcement was made, said his decision was partly motivated by money. He wasn't going to lie and say that it was not the case.
Yep.
And it partly motivated by the desire to spend more time in Australia during the off-season. Other people would come up with other reasons. You know, Cameron Tringale put out a statement that just cited as though it was divine intervention that sent him to LIV Golf as well. So they will all have their own rationales for it. But it doesn't disguise what they're doing. They're being stooges for murderers and human rights abusers. Mm. And you can dress it up in whatever rationales you care to do and make it talk about a business decision, as Cam Smith has done this morning. But that's what they're doing here. And there's no reason why they should feel any kind of pride about it as well. And the difference here between the idea of staying on the PGA Tour, if it is a business decision, which is potentially a lot more lucrative for guys like a Cam Smith who are on the top of their game, and a Joaquin Neiman versus the other guys, is that the money still has to be earned out there, and the money doesn't have to be earned at LIV Golf.
The prevailing thought was that the Cam Smiths, the Mark Leishmans, would wait, you know, do a solid for their captain in Trevor Immelman. What happened? Why is that not the case? You know, they haven't been suspended yet. There's no tee in the ground yet in Boston, but why would they leave at this point, knowing that Trevor Immelman has been staying up half the night trying to put this team together, answering questions on social media to anyone who asks, you know, what's going on with your team? Is Cam Smith going to stay? Well, as far as I know, he's going to stay. Well, clearly he's not going to stay. What happened in the interim from Memphis when Cam Smith said, oh, I'm playing on that President's Cup team, to this announcement today?
Greg Norman offered them more money. Trevor Immelman's not offering to pay them to play the President's Cup, which is typically team events in golf are often, you know, there's some charitable donations attached to it in your name, but generally speaking, it's sort of a matter of team loyalty, team pride, continental pride, I guess, in the case of the Ryder Cup. But the loyalty is what Trevor Immelman was relying upon in putting together his team, and what has been made perfectly clear from the very outset of the LIV Golf announcements is that loyalty is not a character trait that you're going to find among these guys very much at all. So in a way, it's not surprising that Trevor Immelman finds himself in this position now of having to reassess who's going to play on his team and who's going to be eligible. And in the case of the other names we saw here today, I mean, with Tringale, with Harold Varner, with Anirban Lahiri, none of those names are necessarily all that relevant in the world of golf. Your average golf fan would struggle to pick some of them out of a lineup, frankly, but their accomplishments are dwarfed by the amount of money that they're presumably being paid. You look at Harold Varner, who's made a little over $10 million in his career. So in his 30s, never having won on the PGA Tour, he's suddenly been paid a multiple of his career earnings. I mean, Greg Norman must dread the day that the Saudi Crown Prince Googles the accomplishments of the players that he's paying well over the odds for here, because it doesn't make any business sense at all, and it doesn't constitute momentum. There was a time when a Cam Smith and a Joaquin Neiman going to LIV Golf would have constituted momentum that should be worrying to the PGA Tour. After what happened last week, I'm not so sure that it constitutes momentum or a worry. It'll certainly be a disappointment to them, because Cam Smith is a huge loss to the PGA Tour. He's the world number two. He's won a major.
Going to be the defending champ at the Players.
Exactly. He's a guy who is extremely competitively relevant.
Yeah.
Among the top handful of competitively relevant guys in the world, which can't be said of many other guys who've gone to live in more recent times. But it won't be as worrying for the PGA Tour coming out of last week as it would have been had it happened before then, because what they got out of last week is essentially their commitments from 18 of the top 20 players in the world are hanging around on the PGA Tour. Now, the PGA Tour has probably bought itself time to make this new lineup work.
Right.
If it fails to follow through on that, if the PGA Tour doesn't actually deliver what it has promised the players and what the players have demanded, well, then it's a whole new ball game. But right now, Jay Monahan's probably not surprised that Cam Smith left, but I don't think he'd be worried that it signals a new wave of guys to come.
Doesn't feel as impactful as a loss of, say, Bryson DeChambeau or Brooks Koepka or Dustin Johnson, for example. As we announced these six players going to LIV, well, these players could be busy over the next several weeks. So many have talked about wanting to spend more time at home with their family. You see the remaining LIV schedule: Massachusetts, Illinois, Thailand, Saudi Arabia, and then Florida. You got to hustle back home to be with the kids before Halloween. So we'll see if these players can make it work. All right, folks, big day on the news front. Just getting started on golf today. When we return, we re-examine Rory's goals for the year and if he hit the mark he set for himself way back in January. Back on golf today, weekend to remember in Atlanta as Rory McIlroy rallied for a final round 66 to win the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup, and the win marks the largest final round comeback in Tour Championship history. Rory becoming the first player to win the FedEx Cup three times. How about that putt, by the way, on 15? So he's won in 2016, 2019, and 2022. The only other player with multiple FedEx Cup titles, Tiger Woods, won in 2007 and 2009. So let's take a look at Rory's notable accomplishments from this past season. The three victories, 10 top 10 finishes and 16 starts. The first player to win three FedEx Cups. Top 10 at all four majors, including that runner-up at the Masters, led the PGA Tour in scoring average, 68.67. Now, back in January, Rory laid out some of his goals in Abu Dhabi.
You know, I used to sit down on the flight here and write down, like, I want to win five times. I want to win a major. I want to win the race to Dubai or the FedEx Cup. I want to do this or that. And, of course, I want to do all those things. I'd love to win six times in a season. I've never done that before. I've won five. And all those things are great goals, and they're things to try to work towards. But I think the biggest thing for guys that at the level that we're at is it's, you know, I want to hit over 60% of my fairways. I want my proximity inside 150 yards to be a certain number. I want my strokes gained putting to be a certain number. I think having goals that are more objective and more that I'm in control of. A successful year comes down to, achieving what you want to achieve. And again, that's, you know, I can't control really if I win. I mean, you can control if you win golf tournaments, obviously, but there are other variables in there that are out of your control. But I think it's just it's playing well, it's playing consistently, it's trying to improve on certain aspects of your game that you want to improve on, and putting yourself in position to win. I think that's the thing. The more times you just put yourself in position, you know, you play good enough golf to you be around the lead on the back nine on a Sunday, that's when you really find out what you're made of and whether you can, repeat the swing and hit the shots under pressure when you need to. And I guess that's a successful year to me. If I get myself in that position a lot of times and, you know, I feel comfortable and I feel like I can hit those shots under the pressure, then, I know that I'm doing the right things.
Let's see how Rory did. Wanted 60% of fairways hit, just short with 58%, but better in proximity to the hole, closer with his irons, and way better in strokes gained putting. One of the high points of his season was that flat stick. So your thoughts kind of on this process goals, you know, not necessarily saying, yeah, I want that green jacket in my closet. It's more about improvement in aspects of the game, things he says he can control.
Those goals that Rory McIlroy talked about setting, you can tell that the very goal setting process itself has been shaped by experience, because it's so much more granular. It's about performance rather than results. We talked about the proximity, talked about the putting, all things that just simply by dint of hard work and application he can impact. Whereas we've seen every guy on tour, every guy who plays for a living who's had a chance to win a tournament, sometimes it's snatched away from them through no fault of their own.
Right. So everybody wants to win the Masters.
Exactly. Yeah. And, shooting a 64 on Sunday is usually good enough to do that. It wasn't for him this year because Scottie Scheffler was too far out in front. So it's interesting that the process that he is in charge of has come to define his goal setting. And what also struck me there was that the goal setting was internal rather than external. Mm. We'll sit here and every golf fan out there will sit in a grill room and say, Rory needs to do this or Rory needs to accomplish this. And if that can become wearing on a guy who's in the public eye if you set your goals based on what everyone else told you. And I remember asking Tom Kite years ago, did he ever feel as though he ought to have won the Masters? Because no one ever played Augusta National better for longer without winning than Tom Kite did. And Tom Kite said he never felt as though he ought to win. He said there were times where he should have won, where he had the opportunity, but the idea that he ought to have won it was put on him by somebody else, and he wasn't having that. And you can see how Rory's goal-setting parameters have changed here, where it is things he can control, tuning out the noise around him. I'm sure his goals or broader ambitions include winning the Masters, winning more major tournaments, but it's not necessarily something he's going to put on a list of goals in any given year. The hope is that the goals, should he achieve them, would lead to the results, I guess.
How much is this just the evolution of who this player is as a person, a meditator, someone who's thoughtful, someone who's almost trying to kind of let go of the steering wheel, you know, like Luke Skywalker trying to destroy the Death Star. You had to let go, is what Obi-Wan told him. You can't, if you're gripping the steering wheel, you're probably not going to get what you want. And when you haven't won a major in 8 years, I imagine you have to alter how you go about setting goals. Because if it was only about major championships for Rory in these last 8 years, and obviously he wants to win majors, but that'd be a lot of sleepless nights for someone if you're being reminded, as he often is, well, you haven't done this, you haven't done that, despite winning FedEx Cups and Players' Championships.
Isn't this the fine line, I guess, between acceptance and ambition? And trying to find a happy medium between the two? Because I'm sure, like every other player out there, he goes out with grand ambitions every year. You know, we've seen Justin Thomas repeatedly make public his list at the end of a season. Smart enough not to do it at the start of the season. And they all have ambition, but with ambition has to come a certain level of disappointment. You set goals in the risk of having your heart broken along the way. And I remember having a conversation by text with Rory a couple of years ago, just talking about the start of the year, sort of golf ambitions, and I made some joke about how lowly my golf ambitions were, and his response was, well, if you set the bar low, you'll never be disappointed. And that's a dangerous thing to do when you're playing golf for a living, is to set the bar so low that you're likely to hit most of them. And you kind of want that list where you've met some of your goals, hopefully some really important goals, but you're showing progress on other goals. I don't think the objective on the goals list, realistically, is to check off all of them.
Well, you just mentioned Justin Thomas. He's someone who's known for setting goals, you know, before the season and showing us, usually at the Tour Championship. He finished the Tour Championship at a tie for fifth this Sunday at Eastlake. Put a bow on a very solid PGA Tour season. You know, of course, winning that second PGA Championship, that Wanamaker. You take a look at this list, 10 top 10s and 21 starts, that T5 at the Tour Championship, fifth in the final FedEx Cup season standing. So it's been fun to watch JT, you know, sometimes in that press conference, he'll show us this notes page from his phone. So you said it, I think, perfectly. You want to have some goals that are attainable that you reach, and maybe that's some that are a few out of reach. And this, Amy, seems to be kind of the perfect sweet spot. Some check marks and some red slashes as well. Did not win four times or more. Did not top 10 in all majors, but he did win at least one. Strokes gain numbers didn't get. The strokes gain total numbers. The fairways hit 60%. That was the same number Rory McIlroy wanted, or 0.5 in strokes gained, got that one. Number one in the world, did not get. So this is like really kind of that balance you're speaking of. You know, some that you're going to be able to get and some that are maybe just out of reach.
And the important one to me there is the one at the very bottom. Work harder than I've ever worked before, because that is the one thing on there that he has absolute control of.
Absolutely.
That nobody else can impact. And that speaks to attitude. And the attitude really has to be the key to the goal setting. Attitude and application.
Well, on that note, we want to get you involved. What are the top five goals for your game over the next year? Your list could be featured on this very show.
Well, our colleague John Wood has walked more than 300 miles following guys this year on the PGA Tour. But now that he's got a chance to put his feet up, we're going to get him on the phone. We're going to talk to him about the season that was and what happens next. John will be right with us.
Look, it's been a tumultuous time for the world of men's professional golf in particular. And I've been right in the middle of it. You know, I've picked a great time to go on the PGA Tour board. But yeah, I've been in the thick of things, and I guess every chance I get, I'm trying to defend what I feel is the best place to play elite professional golf in the world. And you know, it's in some way, you know, it's in some ways fitting that I was able to get this done today, to, you know, sort of round off a year that has been very, very challenging and different.
And that tumult, fracturing at the top of the game, continues today as six players, including Cameron Smith, on their way to the LIV Golf Series starting Friday outside of Boston. With more, we welcome in our colleague John Wood. Always good to spend some time with you. How big a loss for the tour is today's announcement of these six players going to LIV, in particular the Players' Champ and Open Champ in Cameron Smith?
Yeah, I think Cam Smith is the big name, obviously, on that list, along with Joaquin Neiman. It's a big loss, as highly as he's ranked, as well as he's played this year. And he's a popular guy. Guys like playing with him. Fans like him. So that's a pretty significant loss. And the one I really feel for right now is Trevor Immelman for that President's Cup, losing, you know, what he thought was going to be two of his big guns on that team with Neiman and Cameron Smith. So Smith's a big loss in that list to me.
John, you mentioned how popular Cam Smith is among his peers. One of the messages that also came out of that player meeting in Wilmington a couple of weeks ago was the players made clear to the commissioner that they don't want to compete with LIV golfers going forward, that they don't want to be in a competitive environment with them, that they've created this kind of separate world for themselves. At what point during the course of this season did you notice these kind of relationships between players perhaps grow more tense and then eventually fracture in the way that they have?
Good question. It happened fairly quickly, I think. Once the initial announcement was made, the early guys who left, I think the feeling was pretty quickly went to that, you know, this is not right, that they should be able to play both. I watched Cameron Smith and Rory play together once this week, and it seemed very cordial. It didn't seem contentious at all. And I think those two are, you know, Rory's capable of disagreeing with a decision and not judging somebody poorly and still being able to have a relationship with them. But it definitely splintered fairly quickly once the announcement was made, they were moving forward.
You were in Eastlake last week, John, when all of these announcements about what the future changes are going to be coming to the PGA Tour. How did those changes go down among the players that you spoke with?
The players that I spoke with love them. Of course, a lot of those guys are going to be in the elevated events already. But to me, I think the tour made a big step and I've talked about this for a long time with caddy friends, with player friends. I think the tour took a big step in giving more to those who bring eyes to the television set and those who sell the tickets. Obviously, every tournament's good. All these guys are really good. But there are a certain amount of players that drive the tour. And I think this was a way to keep them, but also, you know, reward them for what they do for the tour. So I think most of the guys that I talked to last week were pretty pleased with them.
Woody, do you think this will elevate the rest of the tour membership? Or as James Hahn says, this will make it harder for some of the lower tier PGA Tour members?
I disagree with that for two reasons. One, and this goes back to when the world events started, nobody was born into those events. They earned their way in. You don't show up and all of a sudden you're in the big events. You have to play great golf and then you get in. So those guys who are not in the elevated events right now, they just it's the antidote to everything on the tour: play better. And they have a huge incentive. They already did, but now they've got even a bigger incentive to play better. And in those events, most likely the competition isn't going to be as difficult. So they're going to be playing for a lot of money with a lot of those top tier players not there. So it's going to be pretty obvious who's playing well there and who can move up to the so-called, those elevated tournaments. So it's a cliche, but it fixes everything on tour. And that's just play better.
It's one of my favorite cliches, actually, involving the PGA Tour. Now, it's hard to play great golf, Woody, I'd imagine, when you have a lot on your mind. You've watched Rory compete. You've been inside the ropes with him. Has anything surprised you in how well he's played this year, considering all the weighty issues he's had to deal with outside the ropes?
It has. Rory, to me, is one of the most complete human beings on the planet. He's a global thinker. He doesn't just insulate himself in golf and that's it. But he thinks about the world and other people. And I think he's able to compartmentalize those two different things. So once he started playing well the late summer, it didn't surprise me. I think it just he is able to hold those two concepts in his head and concentrate on one at one time, shut it off, and move to the other. So, such an impressive year, not just the golf, but what he did for golf.
John, Rory can't really be considered a surprising winner, I suppose, of the FedEx Cup. But of all the tournaments you watched this year, all the guys you followed out there for NBC, who surprised you the most, for better or worse, in terms of the year they had that just closed?
I would say Cameron Young. I didn't know a lot about Cameron Young early in the year. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like he was in the top five of every single event he played in. Chad Reynolds, his caddy, started with him in the middle of the summer, and they've had a great run together. It's a great team, and I talked to Chad about him. And he's just so thoroughly impressive. Just watching him, he is strong in every part of his game, seems very calm. And this is a guy I really, to be honest with you, I hadn't heard of 1 year ago. So Cameron Young, to me, is the biggest surprise on tour this year.
John, I want to leave you with this. Are you optimistic about the future of the professional game?
Very, very. I just think, in my mind, it feels like this is going to be the last run of people moving over to the LIV Tour. And, you know, who knows what's going to be happening in the next couple of years? I don't think anybody knows with the lawsuit and everything that goes along with it. But, boy, you look at that top 20 in the world. So many are young, and most of them stayed with the PGA Tour. So I'm very optimistic for professional golf. I think it's in a great place.
Woody, it's great to see you. I have no idea how you go about choosing which guitar to play first, but enjoy the rest of your afternoon. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. You guys have a good day.
And you are a wonderful colleague, John Wood, former caddy turned broadcaster. So our colleague, Paul McGinley, joins us now. You mentioned Rory bouncing back from disappointment. In what ways also has this fracturing at the top of the game given Rory a little extra jet fuel, something larger to play for than himself?
Yeah, hi, guys. I've always felt that about Rory, Damon. I think he's a very inspirational player. Certainly, my observations of him over the years is that when he is inspired, whatever that may be, sometimes it's negativity happens to him. Sometimes it's positivity, and when his heart is emotionally engaged in something, he seems to have a new bounce in his step and a new sprightliness to how he plays the game and how he attacks golf courses. And often that comes on the back of disappointments and huge disappointments. There's no doubt about it. Let's not beat about the bush. It was a massive disappointment for him not to have won in St Andrews this year, when many of us expect him to go on and win on a Sunday.
Paul, you've often said that what you wanted to see from Rory was what in Ireland we refer to as the sharp elbows, this idea of get out of my way. I'm Rory McIlroy, you're not. I'm going to stomp all over you on Sunday afternoons. Are you seeing signs of that out of Rory again?
Yeah, that's what I mean when I say inspirational, Eamon. I really do think that when his heart gets engaged in something, you know, it gives him a new energy in how he approaches the game. And it makes him play really aggressively. And I think that's when he plays at his best. Rather than protecting, I think he plays better when he's on the march, when he's chasing something down or chasing somebody down or chasing a down or trying to prove somebody wrong or trying to stabilize himself after quite a lot of emotion. We saw it last year in the Ryder Cup, all the emotion of how poorly he played in the first few days going out there, not alone winning a singles, but then going on and winning in Vegas a few weeks later. And often we see that from Rory. A big low is followed by a big high. And that's the point that I'm making about him being an inspirational golfer. And it's one of the things that makes him so appealing to watch.
Paul, speaking of St. Andrews, it wasn't that long ago we were singing the praises of Cameron Smith and his world-class effort at the Old Course. How much of a loss is his defection to the LIV Golf Series?
Yeah, I think it's a loss. I mean, I've said it before. I talked about LIV players not preparing for the exam that major championships are, even though some of them may be exempt to play in major championships, and I'm sure Cameron will be going forward exempt for these majors. But he's not going to be practicing for the majors in terms of playing four-round tournaments and in the same competitive conditions that majors are played in. So I love how he plays. I love the aggression. I love the heart that he shows. I love the way he won the TPC. I love the way he won in St. Andrews. And I think he's, he was probably going to go on to win five or six major championships on his current path. Now that he's changed that path and taken obviously a huge amount of money off the table, and now he's going to be preparing for these major championships, playing in a different environment under different competitive conditions, I don't think he's given himself the best chance to go on and add to the major titles that he has. And that's the point that I make about players who have gone to LIV. That is my opinion. Not everybody's going to agree with that. I get that. I understand that. But it's okay to have an alternative opinion. And that's what mine is. And I think if your career wants to be defined by major championships, you've got to put yourself in an environment that's going to prepare you the best to play in major championships. And for me, that's the PGA / DP World Tour going forward.
Paul, Rory McIlroy said on Sunday night he wasn't particularly looking forward to seeing 18 LIV guys at Wentworth next week for the BMW PGA Championship. Keith Pelley, in his memo to European Tour players this morning, referenced the same kind of sentiment. We've even seen in the last couple of days Eddie Pepperell clapping back at Lee Westwood. Is that a broad sentiment among players on the DP World Tour now that they don't want to see these guys in their tournaments, even though legally right now they can't do anything to stop it?
I would say without exception, that's the sentiment from every player who'll be playing in Wentworth, Eamon. I don't know one player, and I've spoken to so many in the last few months, who thinks that the players, everybody's view seems to be, you know what, guys, if you're lucky enough to be offered hundreds of millions or tens of millions to go over and play this alternative tour, particularly if you're late in your career, I get it, I understand it, off you go. But, to come back then and take spots away, what have we got? 19, 18 players going to play Wentworth. Remember, that's 18, 19 players who are not going to get in because they're playing. Now, those guys who are playing LIV are already making millions of dollars. Some of them have been paid a lot of tens of millions and sometimes hundreds of millions up front. And yet they're going to come in and take spots away from guys in the Tour School and guys in the Challenge Tour and maybe even guys who have full cards because we don't have a full field because of the time of the year that we're playing in Wentworth from getting starts in Wentworth. And I think that's really, really sad and disappointing and very greedy of the players to be doing that, to be playing both sides here. And I've said from the start, you're on one team or on the other and you got to pick your side. But at this moment in time, we have to abide by what the court has said over here in Europe, which is a different ruling than the Americans got. And our ruling was that, basically innocent until proved guilty. And these guys are allowed play in DP World events until the court case happens, which will be sometime next year.
Speaking of teams, you are a victorious Ryder Cup captain. What are the challenges for Luke Donald in Ryder Cup Europe in the face of a potentially weakened DP World Tour, plus the loss of so much institutional knowledge from the likes of Westwood, Poulter, Garcia, GMAC, Keimer, Stenson, etc.?
Well, there's a number of points you made there, Damon. One of them is that the weakened DP World Tour. I really struggle being on the board. I know I might be coming from a slanted angle, but I'm very, very well informed of what's happening on the board. And let's just look at the facts about a weakened DP World Tour that I hear all the time. First of all, we're playing for record prize money this year. Outside of the majors and World Championship, we're paying for £155 million, which is the highest prize money we've ever had in the DP World. Now, that is guaranteed going forward because of our new alliance with the PGA Tour. So financially, we've been in a phenomenal place. Secondly, our leading players are now going to have a direct pathway direct pathway ahead of Korn Ferry Tour straight on to excellent cards on the PGA Tour from 2024 onwards. What an unbelievable opportunity for our very best players to jump onto the Premier League in the world, which is obviously the PGA Tour. You know, and thirdly, if you look at our events during the summer, I mean, we'd record crowds attending our tournaments in Holland. We had over 50,000, again, record attendance at Switzerland last week at Transcorsier. We've sold out 3 of the 4 days for Wentworth next week and probably will sell out 4, including all hospitality, before the tournament starts. We've got Rory coming back to play a number of events, including where the Ryder Cup is going to be played. The top players have committed to continue to playing the schedules they played in previous years, which is somewhere between 4 and 7 tournaments on the DP World Tour going forward. So, I mean, all of this conjecture and talk about the DP World Tour being the fifth tour in the world and all that, the evidence says complete opposite. It's never been in a better position or better been in a better place. And now with our strategic alliance with the PGA Tour, I think that enhances it even more. So I think that's, first of all, is in a really, really good spot. Where I think we are weak and where I would understand some criticism of the DP World Tour is, where are the young guys coming through? You know, where are the Lee Westwoods who used to win 2 or 3 times on tour and the Darren Clark two times a year on tour? Where are those young guys bouncing out of the European Tour and straight into Ryder Cup teams and bolstering up our team? Because what we have is, again, we're going back to the days of the 80s and 90s where we're very, very strong at the top, you know, obviously with McIlroy and Ram on our team, and then you back it up with Hovland and US Open champion Matt Fitzpatrick. And, you know, you quickly have 4 or 5, 6 guys, Shane Lowry, you know, who look very, very strong and be the backbone of our team. But where are the guys coming behind that? And that's what I'm looking to the DP World Tour for. And that's where I think, you know, I'm disappointed that our younger players are not bouncing through with 2 or 3 wins in a season. Now, guys are winning a tournament, but then they retrace back into top 20s and miss cuts and kind of, you know, wandering along the tour and rather than bursting their way through. So I think what Luke will be looking for will be 3 or 4 of those guys. We saw Matt Wallace again. There's a guy that I think could ignite and has got all the heart and guile to play at the very, very top level, win major championships and particularly play Ryder Cup. Will be a great addition to our team, but we need to see more form from Matt like we saw last week. So that's what we're looking for more than anything else, Damon, is these young guys and the young Højgaard twins. We have a lot of really good players, and no doubt you stand in the range of the DP World Tour event and you watch the quality of ball striking, you watch how these guys play and you think, wow, why is this guy not winning more? Why is this guy not top 50 in the world? Why is he not competing and playing in all the big events in the world and doing well in them?
Paul, this narrative of the DP World Tour being somehow diminished has also been peddled repeatedly by a lot of LIV guys, particularly Lee Westwood, both in terms of the new world rankings coming into effect a couple of weeks ago, and then the changes announced by the PGA Tour last week. You're on the board of the DP World Tour. What was your reaction to what the Jay Monahan announced as the future vision for the PGA Tour?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm delighted to see the top players committing to play so many events. You know, that's what we're missing in the game. I'm not a believer. I know I've come through that myself. I'm not a believer. And again, a lot of people will disagree with me. I'm not a believer in being independent contractors. And certainly what we've seen as a sport by having independent traders, being in a trader status, we've been open to attack. And it's exactly what LIV have done. They've taken advantage of the fact that our players were not contracted to the tour in the way that could have buttoned them down. They couldn't have left except for a transfer fee. So we were exposed in that way as a sport, and you know, LIV and Saudi have come in and taken advantage of that. So anything that's going to get the players really committed, I'm all in favour of. In terms of the DP World Tour going forward, you know, I think that it's, as I say, it's in a really strong place. And yeah, I can understand the sentiment, and I know people have made some good points. And speaking to Thomas Bjorn, who's made some very good points about, you know, it's not just about finishing 10th or 15th and winning world ranking points. There is a skill, and it should be rewarded for actually winning an event. Whether no matter what tour it's on, to get over the line and at the heart and guide to actually come out number one in a tournament should be worth some extra points no matter what tour you're playing on. And I get that. I understand that. But you know, certainly the mathematicians who are behind the world rankings have looked at all of this, and we've gone down the road of strokes gained, and we've gone down the road of, well, if you want to climb the world rankings, you've got to compete and do it against the very top players in the world. So what you could say that we've done is, in some ways, and you know, it's kind of a little bit by chance, but a little bit done by the mathematicians as well, is, you know, because of the gateway is now open between the PGA Tour, sorry, the DP World Tour straight onto the PGA Tour, those guys can really rise up the world rankings. But rather than doing it in Europe, they've got to get it, you know, finishing the top 30 in our money list, which will probably much get them a card on the PGA Tour. But then they got to go and compete on the PGA Tour against the very best players. And that's where they're going to get the majority of their world ranking points. I don't think it's going to make a huge difference to guys on the DP World Tour, because generally the only tournament that we were really concerned about getting in terms of world rankings was what was, you know, trying to be in the top 100 to get into the PGA Championship. Because, you know, if you were in the top 50 in the world, you were generally playing world events and majors anyway, and that's what you were doing.
I'm curious what you make of the changes to the Ryder Cup qualification process that was announced this morning, Paul, because clearly the DP World Tour can't legally prohibit LIV players from attempting to qualify for the team, but some of this criteria would seem to make it a little bit more difficult for them to do so. But I'm particularly struck by the fact that Luke will have six captain's picks. Last time around, Podrick decided to go from 4 to 3. Luke has gone from 3 to 6. What do you make of this process?
Yeah, I think it's a clever way of, you know, the turbulent waters anyone we're going to face in the next 6-9 months until we come to the other end of this court case, you know, and eligibility for players. It buys a little time by having six picks as to whether they're going to be eligible or not. Also, I think it's quite clear. Certainly, you know, in hindsight, Podrick would have wanted more picks if he had a second chance, even though he wouldn't admit it. I think, you know, six picks would have given us a little bit more flexibility going into Whistling Straits, and it was a mistake, particularly in the back of COVID, that we didn't have that. Now, the big challenge for Luke is going to have, if these players do become eligible, they do win the court case over here in Europe, which could be a different result, remember, than what the court case could be in America. But if they do win it in Europe, the big challenge for Luke is going to be, particularly bearing in mind the animosity that's feeling and the resolve that's very, very strong from the players who've remained loyal to the tours, including Ryder Cups, is we don't want these guys in the team. So we could have a very, very difficult situation here that Luke is going to have to manage. So, you know, you talk about leadership in Ryder Cup captaincy, you know, Luke might have a huge job to manage that whole situation going forward. But by giving himself six picks, he's not on the hook for anything at this moment in time. And we just have to wait and see until this time next year when, you know, things at that stage then will have kind of rolled out and we kind of know where we are in a better place. And also, you know, what is the feeling of the players who have made the team towards the players who have not, who potentially could be with LIV? And, you know, does Luke want to manage the situation of bringing LIV players into the team? At this moment in time, I think that would be highly unlikely. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in the next 6 months. So that's why I say it buys a little bit of time.
Paul, we threw a lot of meaty topics your way. You hit it out of the park as usual. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll speak to you soon.
It's a pleasure, guys. Thanks very much. See you down the road. Bye-bye.
2014 European Ryder Cup captain. I tell you what, very strong about the future of the DP World Tour, citing the strategic alliance, the record purses, the record crowds in some cases, the Rolex series. You could also see how he was an effective, victorious Ryder Cup captain. Luke Donald could do a lot worse than to call Paul McGinley and make him a vice captain, in my opinion.
You know, there's only room for one opinionated gray-haired Irish guy on this show.
He's encroaching on
it
your
ain't me
turf
anymore. What actually struck me from Paul's comments there, particularly about Cam Smith, and talking about how he's obviously a popular guy, a great player, and an accomplished player, is the idea of what you are prepping for major championships.
I hadn't heard that either. Yeah.
And this idea that there's one form of preparation, which is measuring yourself week in, week out, against the best players in the world. And Cam Smith's chosen not to do that. So, in a way, how are you measuring yourself? How are you measuring your ability to compete going forward, or best prepare in major championships going forward, if you're essentially playing what to this point has not looked like much more than a hit and giggle in what has been staged so far? And I thought that was an interesting angle that Paul took on this is, what does it mean? We know what these guys have accomplished.
Right.
And if they are competitively relevant, what does it mean going forward for these guys in terms of their ability to be prepared on what will be the increasingly rare occasions when they're able to compete against the best players in the world?
Yeah, and Paul saying he's changing his mind on what he thinks, you know, is the potential future for Cameron Smith. I tell you, Pete Sampras in tennis, and you knew I'd get a tennis reference in before the show was over, used to call it being match tough. You know, being match tough leading in to the Grand Slams, and maybe some potential for Cameron Smith not to be that way without that kind of competitive sharpness that's found week to week on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, because in his best case scenario, you could say even with the field that's been announced for this week in Boston, there are at best going to be a half dozen guys in that field who might have registered on Cameron Smith's radar as potential competitors in a tournament going forward. But it wasn't a Cameron Tringale. It wasn't a Harald Varner. You know, it's guys like, say, a Joaquin Niemann who are still relevant, or, say, a Koepka, if his body was healthy and found some form. But there are a lot of those guys who are simply cannon fodder. They're they're not players that a Cameron Smith would have particularly registered as competitors or rivals or people to measure himself against as the world number two. He's leaving those players behind.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, LPGA qualifying school is underway with the second stage taking place October 18th to the 21st at Plantation Golf and Country Club in Venice, Florida. Now, the players will then advance to the Q Series, a two-week contest in Alabama. Now, this is where LPGA cards will be handed out. All players who qualify for Q Series through Stage 2 of Q School will receive Epson Tour status. Now, last week, Bobby Stricker, the daughter of Steve Stricker, advanced to Stage 2 of LPGA qualifying thanks to her tie for 7th finish at Mission Hills Country Club. Now, Bobby, a former player at Wisconsin, had her dad on the bag. Very, very cool. In fact, been quite the stretch of golf for the Stricker family. On Sunday, Steve won the Ally Challenge for a second victory on the PGA Tour Champions this season, his 9th overall. And after the win, he reflected on the special moments of late for the family.
You know, I caddied for Bobby last week, and that was probably cooler than this. You know, I mean, just to be a part of what she did and to see the enjoyment and the excitement on her face, knowing that she's going on to the next stage, means a lot to a dad. So that was pretty cool. Like I said, I think that was cooler than today. So we've had some fun the last few weeks, and hopefully we can continue that going.
Yeah, they want to keep it going. Indeed, Bobby Stricker joins us now. Bobby, first of all, congratulations. Great to see you. With all this Stricker success of late, how much have the tears been flowing? I have to ask.
You know what? They've been okay. We haven't cried, but we have for sure been excited. Yeah, my dad went in this past weekend. Was awesome. We missed my sister there, my little sister. She wasn't able to be there, but haven't seen him win in a while, and it's always super cool to see that. So we had a fun time.
Bobby, your dad went through Q School himself on the PGA Tour several times, has some experience. What was his advice when you were heading into this process?
Yeah. He caddied for me. So I played in Stage 1 last year, and he did the same thing. He caddied for me. I didn't get through, but I talked a lot to him about his experience last year, and yeah, again, this year, it's super helpful to hear from someone that's gone through it. And he went through it a few times. And just the mental side, like the golf side, he's obviously super helpful in the golf, you know, like the course management. He's my swing teacher, so obviously having that there. But just the mental side and how gruesome it really is, like doing it and having him there and knowing that he's gone through it is and it was super helpful, and it is going to be helpful as I go forward.
Well, Bobby, I watched this interview that you did with Wisconsin Golf, and you said, quote, "I just knew I was going to play well," end quote. Where did that confidence and peace of mind come from?
Yeah, honestly, just the good play that I've had leading up to it. And yeah, I don't know, I just had this like sense of peace when I was there. I I had gone through it last year, and I knew what I was doing. There was a comfort in knowing like what my body was going to feel like, and also just knowing that I had improved since last year. I knew my game was in a better spot, and I knew that those things that I struggled with last year had improved. And yeah, Dad and I talked about it at the end. I don't know, there were just good vibes like all week. Palm Springs is a beautiful place and a beautiful area, and you just look around and there's mountains and just there's scenes that are just kind of breathtaking. So him and I, it was just him and I there, and we had a great time. I love spending that time with him too, so.
Bobby, you turned to golf seriously relatively late in terms of typical golf competitors. You were a tennis player, and then you show up at Q School. You finished high in an enormous field of competitors. Did you surprise yourself by how well you played last week, or did you expect it?
No, I surprised myself for sure. This whole golf journey, really, I was a walk-on at Wisconsin, and I spent 5 years there, and I just had this mentality going in that I just was going to work as hard as I could and just see how good I could get, really. I had dreams, obviously, of what I wanted to do, but I just was like, I'm just going to put my head down and see where I can go. And when I was done with my 5 years, I just didn't really feel like I had peaked yet. So, hence the reason why I decided to turn pro. And this has been a dream of mine, like obviously watching my dad do it growing up. You know, you dream about that. Like that would be really cool. You know, his job is so cool, the places that it takes him. And, definitely had dreamt of that when I was little, but you know, getting to college, I was like, yeah, let's see how far I can go. And I feel like I, again, still can get better in certain areas. And I'm just so excited for, the rest of this journey.
Bobby, I was not out in Palm Springs, but sources tell me that you and your dad were at Cheesecake Factory four nights in a row. Can you confirm that? What did you eat?
Yeah, that is true. I'm not superstitious, but I'm learning that my dad is. So each day when we were done, we were like, hey, well, you know, kept playing good. We better not break this little habit that we have going. So, you know, Cheesecake Factory is a huge menu. So we definitely had a few things each night that were the same. We started out with the same appetizer, but, you know, we had something different every night. So we weren't eating the same thing. But yes, that is true. That's funny.
Bobby, will your dad caddy for you in the next stage of Q School? And if he does, will you have some Kleenex along, more so for him than for yourself?
Yes, he will be caddying for me in October, which is awesome because it's right in the middle of the Schwab Cup. So super grateful that he's taking the time to do that. And yes, there's going to need to be tissues if I make it through the next stage. Because I could tell when we were done on the last hole, on the last day, or right actually when I hit the green on 18, he was like, yay. I could tell he was getting a little choked up, but still had to two putt and get out of there. But yeah, excited for October.
Well, those tears are all we love them. Congratulations on making it through stage one. I'm a tennis player. I may come to you for some tennis tips at some point. Best luck in stage two. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right, great having Bobby Stricker on this Tuesday. Now, coming up, we've got a really special event taking place this week at Baltusrol, a Ryder Cup-style tournament between injured servicemen and veterans from the U.S. and their British counterparts. An amazing field, incredible stories. We meet one of the competitors when we return. Back on golf today, the Simpson Cup is underway this week at Baltusrol. This event started back in 2012 and pits 13 injured servicemen and veterans from both sides of the Atlantic against one another in an annual Ryder Cup-style tournament that raises funds and awareness for OnCourse Foundation, a charitable organization which is registered in both the United States and the United Kingdom. Some details to pay attention to. Tournament between teams of 13 injured servicemen and veterans from the U.S. and Great Britain. Ryder Cup-style tournament held annually since 2012, was postponed in 2020 due to COVID-19. The United States leads the series 5-4. We're pleased to now be joined by Clint Romachet of Team USA. Paint the picture for us at Baltusrol. How would you describe the vibe of the Simpson Cup so far?
I can tell you it's so exciting to be out here. It's electric. It's a little hot. We're a little sweaty, but, you know, as veterans, we're used to that kind of tension right there. Going into this the night before, it was great to meet our British counterparts, having good times back and forth the last couple of days. But last night, when they announced kind of the pairings and what was about to go off this morning, all seriousness hit. And it's just been an amazing day so far.
Clint, you've been involved with a lot of veterans' charities. What drew you to this one in particular? How did you find your way to golf?
You know, OnCourse Foundation really impressed me. I've been exposed to a lot of different veteran nonprofits. And the one thing I feel, you know, for myself as a veteran, like, we don't want handouts. We don't want to just be given something. We don't want sympathy just for what we've experienced. We want an opportunity to prove ourselves, and that's what OnCourse Foundation is doing. It's not just getting guys out here playing golf. It's giving them opportunities in the golfing community for future employment. I mean, we can come out and golf this beautiful golf course and have that memory in the back of our brain for the rest of our lives. But again, we wake up tomorrow, and what's the next process? What's the next step? And OnCourse Foundation provides that. You know, they give that opportunity to continue on with something more than just, you know, here and now.
Clint, I'm always struck by what the game of golf means to those who serve. What has brought you to this beautiful, frustrating game?
You know, for me, I never was around golf. I grew up knowing nothing about golf, no idea about it. I didn't put a club in my hand until I got back from my first Iraq deployment. We bought a old Wilson clubs from the Walmart, and me and a couple of my buddies went to the Fort Carson golf course, and we had some downtime, and we'd just go out there and just hit around and build that teamwork and camaraderie. Had no idea which way to hold the thing or which way to swing the thing half the time, but over the last 3 years, started taking this game serious, because what I've noticed, you know, especially with On Course and all these amazing veterans, all the stuff they've been through, physically, you can still play this game, but it's that mentality, that mental toughness. And that's what I think gravitates a lot of veterans to it. You know, you have gone through so much in your life that you can relate so much of that. I just need to make this one shot. I need to make this. I need to do this. And it's that mental toughness. It's that attitude that so many veterans continue to push forward with in their life. And that's what makes the game of golf so amazing for us.
Clint, you received the Medal of Honor from President Obama for your service in Afghanistan. But at the time, you said you accepted it with what felt like mixed emotions. At the time, can you explain what you meant?
You know, for me, it was one of those moments where you never wake up in the morning and say, oh man, I'm gonna go, you know, win, or as people say, win the Medal of Honor. You never win it. We receive it on behalf of those that we were with that acknowledge what you've done. You know, it's not a lifetime achievement award. It's not a gold medal at the Olympics. You don't train all your life to go receive the Medal of Honor. It's just the time and place, and something happens. And for me, you know, I feel like every other veteran, where my narrative might have went a little longer, but every veteran that is signed to serve this country, you know, their story starts there, and it just depends on when it ends, but they all have the exact same opportunity. And, you know, I might wear it, but I can tell you that is not my medal. That is for all those men and women that have served this country, that continue to serve, and will have to serve in future conflicts.
Clint, we can't thank you enough for your service to our country. Thank you for your time on this Tuesday. Enjoy the Simpson Cup. Hopefully speak to you again down the road.
Absolutely. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.
And you, Clint Romachet, on this Tuesday night.